episode 24 of Welcome to Level 7, Thor, The Dark World.
Welcome to Level 7, the podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Welcome to Level 7. This is a very special episode of Welcome to Level 7. This is the podcast about Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is the podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And today, this is the podcast about what, Daniel?
Thor.
The Dark World. That's right. And I am Dark Ben Avery. And I am here to talk to you about a very dark movie. And I'm in a very dark place right now. Daniel, are you feeling dark? Appropriately dark?
No, I get all the lights on, to be honest. And the dog's here, and he's pretty happy.
But Daniel, how can you be hip and happening if you're not dark?
Oh.
Dark.
I had a really good day today.
That's not dark.
I had steak and pierogies not together, and it was fantastic.
It's not really dark. Okay. Okay,
sorry.
So I'm Ben Avery. I'm a comic book writer, comic book fan, and obviously a Marvel movie fan. And I'm joined by Daniel Dark.
Dandy.
Dark
no,
Butcher.
Dandy. Dandy Daniel Butcher.
I'm dark, not dark Butcher. That sounds so cool.
No.
Dark Butcher.
No. Really?
You don't think that sounds cool?
No. I mean, I'm a happy sort of guy, and I played with some toys today and with my kids. And
Ben, Dark Avery.
You're bringing me down, man.
Daniel Dark Butcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just not feeling it today.
And we are here to talk about Thor, The Dark World. That's what makes this a special episode. Daniel. This was a dark movie.
Well, I saw it in 3D, and I thought that the light level was appropriate. It wasn't overly dim.
You didn't have You didn't go to one of the theaters where they use a dim bulb so it doesn't burn out so quickly?
No.
Daniel, we're going to talk about this movie.
Oh, Ben, I've been dying to talk to you about this movie. We literally have not talked about this. We haven't messaged about it. We've kept everything secret, and I have so much to say about this movie. I hope you look forward to 2 hours of sleep tonight.
You sent one message, I think, after you were done seeing the movie and right when I was leaving my house to go see it. And you said, I am very happy right now. I hope you will be as happy as I am.
Yeah, that's it.
That's
been the only communication. And there's my spoiler. I liked Thor the Dark World. I liked it quite a bit.
Well, speaking of spoilers, we're going to talk for just a couple minutes right here, spoiler free, to address the question of should you see this movie or not. And then we're going to into our...
That's a question?
There's a specific reason why I brought this up, okay?
They're listening.
Daniel.
They're listening. Welcome to Level 7, and you're questioning whether or not they should see Thor the Dark World.
I know, but just hold on, okay? There's a specific reason for
that. Now I'm feeling dark.
Then we'll get into our mission report where we will spoil this thing silly, spoil it rotten, spoil it stupid. And then we do have some feedback about the movie that we will share with you as well. So you will get to hear what these two yahoos think, and then you'll get to hear what the listeners think, or a couple of them anyway. So, Daniel, if you are someone like our listener named Dawn, who was just expecting to go and wait until this came out on video, what would you tell her?
I would say that this Thor movie has a bigger scope than the last Thor movie. It has a bigger story. I think it's fun. I think it has got intergalactic ramifications to it. And I think it's worth going to see in the theater now just so you can get some of your MCU on in the proper place.
And I would say, if you liked the first Thor movie and thought that would be worth seeing in the theater. This definitely would fall into that same category. I can't speak to, and this is something specifically that Dawn was talking about, was she was planning to wait until it was out on video, but then she found out there'd be a tie-in episode and wasn't sure if she should go see it or not. We don't know exactly how it's going to tie into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., although we are going to talk about that. That's one of the items I want to talk about, is what is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. going to be dealing with when they get to the well, that episode. We'll talk about that, but we don't know. So I would say this is a movie worth seeing in the theater. But I don't want to spoil too much. But
I'm gonna say this, and this goes back to our message. When I stack the MCU movies out, Thor has always kind of been the bottom half for me. Fun, enjoyable, but in many ways, it wasn't hugely deep. It wasn't hugely... It was a small movie. It really is. Let's be honest. It's a small movie with its setting in New Mexico. And there's small things going on.
And I disagree with you slightly on that scale there. But
yeah, but for me, Thor the Dark World, it's in the top half. It hits the beats that we expect from an MCU movie. It does the things that you want and need an MCU movie to do. And I'm someone who was not a big fan of Iron Man 3. Where I've been a fan of the Iron Man movies in the past, I kind of got soured a little bit with the Iron Man, as we've heard in past episodes. With this, for me, this raised the game on Thor quite a bit for me.
Daniel, I'm going to say something that might surprise you, but I am the opposite.
Who are you?
I know. I was asking myself that same question, Daniel. And so, yes, I've spoiled a little bit of what we're going to talk about when we get into our mission report. But I would say this is a movie worth seeing because it's part of the MCU and it expands the MCU and it gives you an enjoyable story. But that said, I feel like Phase 2 is not raising me up to the level that Phase 1 was.
Well, so... Again, we've had this argument in the past. What do you look at Iron Man 3 as being part of with the phases?
Iron Man 3 I looked at as being in between phases.
Okay. So if you looked at Iron Man 3 as being in between phases, I think we can safely say that Thor the Dark World is Phase 2. We are full on into it.
It is the beginning of Phase 2, yes. This is the true beginning of Phase 2. But I think we need to start talking in spoilers, so I think we're going to start our mission report. What do you say?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do it.
Mission report.
So everything's finally on the table?
Everything is on the table.
All right, so what do we have for a structure tonight? Do we even have a structure? Are we just two guys being crazy talking to each other on microphones?
Well, I think here's our structure. Our structure is going to be talking about what grade we might give this movie and where it stands in the MCU. And then we're going to talk a little bit about my four areas of storytelling. The style of Thor the Dark World, the theme or themes of Thor the Dark World, the plot of Thor the Dark World, and the characters of Thor the Dark World. How does that sound to you?
Works for me.
And then we will talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the well, and our predictions or thoughts about what could it be that they're going to be dealing with. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I did put this out there, and if this changes significantly between this point in time when we're recording and a point in time when we actually release this episode, I will I'll make an addendum. I'll insert a recording here of me talking about the changes. But I put a poll up on our website. Daniel, did you vote?
Did
you did?
I may have been the first one who voted.
I think you probably were. But in our poll, 11% of the vote gave the grade of C to Thor the Dark World. 42% gave a grade of B. 47%, as of this recording, gave it a grade of A.
Did you vote?
I did.
Well, we know where you voted then, don't we?
Where?
You and your friend who voted for C.
You know, I did. I gave it a C. It's a passing grade. It's a solid grade. And I would show
it's a solid. Well, you might as well have given it a D because D equals diploma.
That's true, I guess. My daughter told me today that C stands for keep on trying. But I
bet that doesn't sit well with Agent Sitwell.
Ooh, you did it. On your own, too.
Actually, it was better delivery.
Your wife doesn't listen to the podcast, does she?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
She's a wonderful woman.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, you know, we're going to talk about things in specific. I liked this movie, don't get me wrong, but I didn't leave the theater excited. I didn't leave the theater thinking, wow, I can't wait to see what happens next. I know, and I should have. I fully admit, I should have walked out excited.
See, here's where I'm confused. You loved Iron Man 3. You want to date it. You want to hold hands with it and walk on the beach with Iron Man 3. And there was Man 3 just didn't do that an MCU movie needs to
do. I do not want to walk on the beach with Iron Man 3. I want to take a walk in the woods, maybe, but not on the beach.
He is still muscly. And Thor, The Dark World, in my mind, put the MCU back on the course it needed to be with both being a fun movie, an action-packed movie, an okay-acted movie, and putting the story elements together for a greater mythology.
Daniel,
let me guess. At the end, you wanted him to lay down the hammer and be semi-vague on what his future is.
Oh, no. Although, there is some vagary there. We don't know what his future is. We don't know what's next for Thor because...
We know exactly what's next for Thor.
No, we don't know what's next for Thor. We don't know if he's going to stick around on Earth and do some adventuring and be with the Avengers, or is he going to go back and forth? We don't know exactly.
Oh, my Lord. Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you.
So, one of my concerns with the end of Iron Man 3 is they make it seem as if Tony may not put on the armor again. And you can say, oh, it's not there because that's what you've been telling me for the longest time. But I've had so many people ask me, is Tony Stark still Iron Man? Where at the end of this movie, thank you, Kevin. Thank you. Our post-credit scene makes it clear that he now has a relationship with Earth. Even if he's traveling back and forth, which he does now have the ability to do amongst all the realms, it puts him in place to be ready for Age of Ultron. He has access to Earth and has a semi-long-term relationship with an Earthling who may or may not die in the near future. But the piece is there. The chess piece is on the board. Where it needs to be, where the Iron Man piece is, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with the Iron Man piece. Does he have extremists? I don't know. Does he make new armor? I don't know. His girlfriend doesn't seem to like the armor, so why would he spend time making new
armor?
Daniel,
we did an Iron Man 3 episode.
I understand, but you like that, but you don't like this?
I didn't say I didn't like this.
You gave it a C.
That's not liking it. That's not loving it. I can't give it an A. And there's a lot of things. There's a lot of reasons why. And some people might say, well, that's just because it's not giving. They didn't give you the movie you wanted or something like that.
But confuse me, and you are a hot mess right now. Oh, you're just a hot mess.
Daniel, I'm going to totally bleep that out one day. I'm serious.
I will not be stopped.
Yeah.
You cannot stop this train.
I'm Mr. Editor. Okay, so anyway. Okay, so... I feel like – I don't know if we should follow our plan here. But yeah, the truth of it is I gave it a C. I like it. Okay? I could give it a B. It just depends on my mood. But it's not a perfect movie. And I had some serious problems with some of the plot stuff. I had some problems with some of the character stuff. I even have
some problems. This isn't Citizen Kane, man. It's an MCU movie.
But it could be. That's what I'm saying. I mean, look, the first Thor movie wasn't perfect, but I enjoyed it a lot more than this one. And that's just it. I didn't walk out of with Iron Man 3, which you keep bringing up, so I'm gonna go back to that quickly. With Iron Man 3, I walked out with a smile on my face. I had enjoyed myself, and I felt hyped. I felt pumped. Avengers, I felt pumped.
My dog is upset with you right now.
Well, you know, I don't share the same movie taste as your dog, okay? He doesn't like Iron Man 3. I get it. I get why people don't like or didn't like Iron Man 3. I think that when people revisit Iron Man 3, especially when they have the context of where Tony Stark is for Age of Ultron, that they'll be more okay with it. But with Thor...
Not that they bothered to put us on the road, Age of Ultron, and where Tony's going to be. Not that they could be bothered with that.
No, that's a legitimate complaint, okay? But talking about Thor the Dark World. Okay, Thor the Dark World does everything it needs to do. As far as, you know, we need to put it on track. We need to start setting up things for Age of Ultron. Start setting up some things for, Infinity Gauntlet. Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah. I was kind of not looking forward to doing this podcast because I feel like I'm going to be really down on this movie. And when I walked out of the theater, I was feeling down on this movie. And I think we should start talking about the movie itself and kind of let that happen here.
So let's go ahead and let's move to style.
Okay, let's talk about style. Maybe as we're stepping through these things, Daniel, you can turn my opinion, and maybe I can bump it up. Maybe we'll see if my grade goes up by the end of our conversation from a C to a B. But with the style of the movie, I think I might give the highest marks to style. This feels like a big movie. This feels like a bigger movie than the first one, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, literally. I mean, we see multiple realms. We see space. I mean, they've taken us into the space. Has any other MCU movie been spacey?
Well, Avengers, some.
It's real brief. I guess here it's not like it's
still brief.
A long period of time. But again, we see multiple worlds and the idea of these portals that are shooting us between worlds,
mm-hmm.
which is really kind of a cool concept, as they're falling through different places. My wife, when she came home, she saw it the night before I did, and she called it Star Trek, and she's not a Star Trek fan, but that was kind of her first jump at it, is that it's a Marvel Star Trek-like movie. And I think it's important that we have a more established character make that first step, since, as you know, I'm worried the Guardians could fail.
Yeah. I mean, it might be too big of a leap between genres. But, yeah, this... It feels like a sci-fi movie. It also feels like a fantasy movie. And it feels like the right thing at the right time. I'm, again, reminded of Clash of the Titans. I'm reminded of Masters of the Universe, where you have that mix of fantasy and technology and that kind of thing. But style is probably... going to get the highest marks for me as far as just hitting what I wanted it to hit and what I needed it to hit.
And so, yeah, I definitely agree. Another style that I do want to make sure that we talk about, and you mentioned it briefly, was fantasy. I'm going to send you a picture, and I want you to tell me, Ben, as I send you this picture, mm-hmm. is this concept art for Thor, the Dark World? Because... when I saw this movie, this is one of the first images that really kind of jumped into my mind when we saw some key scenes in Asgard.
All right, I'm trying to open it.
And I don't think that it helped that Zachary Levi had joined the cast to make me think of this, but it was real obvious, and my wife had the same reaction.
Okay, so this is the floating lanterns from Tangled, right?
Absolutely.
And and you're referring to the funeral scene.
Yep. I mean, it very much had a Tangled look and feel to that, where you've got the city in the background, which, you know, culminates in a tower, and you've got boats out on the water, you've got the flying lanterns. It very, very much felt like a lift out of Tangled.
Maybe, but probably not.
It may not have been intentional. I will give you that, but I do find it at least a bit ironic that style-wise, I'm thinking of another Disney movie. Because Marvel, you know, Thor the Dark World is a Disney movie.
Yeah.
I submitted my tickets today for Disney Movie Rewards. But this is one of the first things that came to my mind when I was done with the movie. Actually, during the movie is, you know, this feels and looks like Tangled.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to those old school, bright and shiny fantasy worlds. You know, Olympus in Clash of the Titans or that kind of thing. And it kept that flavor from the first movie, but then it also built the world some more for us. We got to see some of the things going on in the villages or the, you know, the underparts of the city with the regular folk and the.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things I think that I said when we did Thor, when we did our review of it, was, do people live in this city?
Mm-hmm.
And this time you get to see people living, working, playing within the city. And I do think we're finding out a lot more about Asgard as it's getting built up, because when you talk about the different realms, I do think we find out that Hogan is not an Asgardian by birth.
Right.
Because he's from a different realm.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, they just kind of left him there and came back to him so he could look up in the sky once, but...
But I mean, didn't that make you question, you know, Fandral, as another example, he doesn't have that Asgardian look because he's much more of the dashing buccaneer versus mm-hmm. being a Viking look. Did it make you wonder whether or not Fandral might have been in the MCU from another realm instead of from Asgard itself?
I honestly didn't think about it. I didn't think about it. So... but it was interesting to see Hogan, where he had come from, and they were defending that place, and you have some nice fantasy war stuff going on, big battle scene, and they come back to that. I mean, they're style wise, and the special effects were pretty good. Especially the flying ships and stuff like that, and the flying boat, and all the designs of the ships and the boats and this and that. Like I said, highest marks for style for me. Anything else for style for you?
No. I thought it was nice to begin to expand our universe, and really they did. In Thor, we got three worlds. Here, we get at least five, six separate realms. So, again, we're becoming part of a bigger world here in the MCU.
Yes. And then, of course, we actually go to the collector as well at the end.
Exactly, which I'm assuming he's just in space.
Yeah, yeah, just somewhere in our realm, but way off in the distant reaches of the galaxy.
Which does show the Asgardians. We do see some ships. Almost again, this style wise, I got a Star Wars skiff, Jabba skiff sort of feel to some of their ships. We've seen ships that fly around, you know, within an atmosphere. I'm assuming because of the inn with Volstagg and Sif that they have ships that can fly out of the atmosphere, unless of course they use the Rainbow Road technology to show up there. But you know, I just don't know. I mean, maybe they did teleport there via the Rainbow Road, but they definitely can travel galactically.
Yeah.
And not just to set locations within different worlds, because, again, with the Clutcher being out in space, he's clearly moving around.
So that's style, then. And I like the look of this movie. I like the feel of the tone that they set with this movie. It's an adventurous movie. I don't know why they felt like they needed to put dark in the title. I think they could have done something else,
Do think the word dark probably goes into a plot point, so we'll get there.
Okay.
And I do kind of question that when we get to the plot. So.
All right. So number two, theme. I felt like there was a few worthwhile themes in this movie. They aren't like big, hit you on the head with them, or you know, like Captain America, where you feel almost moved by some of the themes. But there's themes of brotherhood and identity and loss And of course, love conquers all.
Purpose.
Purpose.
You know, is Thor's purpose to be king, or is it Thor's purpose to be a guardian?
Yeah, and I think actually that might be a better word than identity. I was using identity for that kind of idea, but I think purpose might even be a better word for that idea than what I was saying. And you know, and how does your purpose change with events? You know, where they lost their mother, and so Loki and Thor suddenly they're having to work together and deal with that loss, but also look at, okay, what is our goal now? Is it vengeance or just protection of the realm and that kind of thing? And Loki has, you know, to figure out what's his place in this world.
Loki also has to figure out the guilt of helping to kill his mother. But
yeah, that's something that will come up eventually.
Something. Well, and let's be honest, it wasn't really addressed this heavily at all in this movie. But really, he had a role to play in Frigga's death.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's the thing, and tell me if I'm wrong. I felt like this wasn't a very deep movie.
You're wrong. No, you're right.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, the themes were ones that would be the typical sort of things you're trying to learn from an animated feature or from a movie. Where you know the lessons are there because you need to write a lesson into it. I'm sure you could probably tell me more as someone who's an actual author. But you know, it was more fun for me than deep.
Yeah, depth is not one of the strong suits of this movie. And honestly, as far as the Marvel movies go, depth is never. I don't feel like that's ever on the forefront. I know they try for that. You know, with some of the stuff they tried for it with Iron Man 3, they tried for it with Incredible Hulk. I think the place where it hits the best is Captain America. And I think that honestly, Winter Soldier is going to be one where there's going to be some depth, some things that are going to cause people to think, and some thoughtful ideas are going to be in that movie. But no, this is not a very deep movie. It's surface level adventure. And that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. But it doesn't. It causes me to say, "Well, I'm not going to give it an A." You know, give me some theme that I can really chew on. There's not much to chew on here, at least for my first viewing. Now, I was hoping I get to see it a second time with my son before we got to talk about it, so I could kind of work through some of my problems with the movie and see if they really are there. But
and let's be honest. I mean, really, there are themes for kids. You know, families are going to feel comfortable bringing their kid to this movie mm-hmm. because of those sorts of themes. But it's not the sort of thing that you're going to chew over for a long time if you're an adult. And for some folks, that could be a problem.
Some folks, it could be.
But for me, I was fine with it because the fact that they weren't trying to be overly complex with me and because I wasn't looking for an overly deep theme, I just had a good time.
So, theme. Shall we move to plot then?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about some of the plot stuff going on here. And this is where my problems really start bumping in. Theme, I'm okay with. There not being real deep themes going on. There's stuff happening with the characters. Style, I enjoyed. When it gets to plot, Daniel, I got some problems with the plot. I've got a problem with the opening of this movie. Because it's the same basic thing. There's a war shown to us in flashback. We see the end of that war. We see the king of Asgard come down and put an end to the war. And there is a thing that, you know, again, the MacGuffin, in this case, it's the dark energy.
The ether.
Yeah. Apparently is an infinity gem.
Yeah, and we'll get to that.
We will, but okay. I mean, it was a surprise to me because it didn't look like a gem, so obviously
okay, so do you want to pause and talk about this for a few minutes?
No.
Because I'm ready to talk about it if you are.
We'll come back to it.
Okay.
We'll come back to that. But the bottom line being, this opening is the same opening we got in the first movie. And that bothered me. I'm like, well, this is neat and it looks great. Although it felt a little small, but it looks great. And then, you know, you have the bad guy. He's really bad. How do we know he's really bad? He's willing to kill everybody in order to kill
his friends and family.
In order to kill everybody else.
Everyone who's in his cell phone circle of free calls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, okay. So there's interesting things going on. And it has to be shown, I guess. But I feel like if this is the story you have to tell, maybe do a slightly different story so you don't have to do it the same exact way the first movie did it. It just felt like, okay, well, here we're going, you know, and it's Lord of the Rings opening, you know, it's the opening of Lord of the Rings. It's the opening, you know, so, flashing back. We got to know where the MacGuffin came from. So it already started turning me against the movie at that point.
So here's my first question. So are you holding the writers of the MCU to a higher standard?
A higher standard of what?
Every other writer, because I've often heard that there is no such thing as a new story. So
no,
of course
that's wrong. That's wrong. There is that it's not, is there a new story? It's, is there a new way to tell it? And in this case, yeah. Am I holding them to a higher standard? Don't be repetitious. You know, Iron Man.
What was the MacGuffin in Thor?
The MacGuffin in Thor?
Well, because you told us we have to go chase some object.
No, what I'm saying is they open it in the same way. You know, don't be repetitious. Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3 are very different movies. And, it comes from the main character being in a different place. But this is all flashback stuff. This is all exposition that we have to get out of the way. And it's the same story. There's war. Asgards are fighting bad dudes. Bad dudes look like they're going to win. The king of the Asgards comes and stops the war. And wins the war. Okay? Let's not be repetitious. You know, find a different way to tell this story so you're not just repeating yourself. That's all I'm saying. I started turning against the movie at that point because I'm like, oh, I've seen this before and it was in another Thor movie. So, again, and this might be just me saying this is not the movie I was expecting, and so I'm against it already because it's doing things that I wasn't expecting.
Man, maybe this wasn't the movie you wanted, but maybe it was the movie you needed.
No, don't you dare turn my words against me. Okay. So that was just the beginning, though. Then we moved to Earth, right? And so we get to see where our friends are. Where's Jane Foster? Where's, what's her name? Kat Denning.
Turn. Intern.
Yeah. Well, where is she? Okay. What's her name? There.
It's Darcy.
Darcy. Where's Darcy? Where's Eric? We have a new character, the intern's intern.
Is that Ian?
Yeah. And we find out that they're now in London. Okay. And I'm okay with all this, mostly.
Which makes perfect sense that they're in London.
Okay. So you're ready for it, Daniel?
Okay, I will agree that it doesn't make perfect sense they're in London. Go ahead.
Are you ready for this? Yep. Do you know what I'm going to say?
Put it in my ears.
I'm going to say the C word. I'm going to say it. Coincidence.
I love coincidence. It makes me so happy.
This entire movie is built on coincidence. Okay, I don't understand how this works. I'm not... see, I'm going to sound like I hate this movie.
Okay, wait. What coincidence?
The coincidence is she just happens to be in London, where there just happens to be the one rift that opens up to the ether, to the dark energy.
Pause.
And she just happens to stumble through or get pulled through. I couldn't quite tell. And just happens to be the one. Jane Foster just happens to be the one who gets infected with the ether. All right. Now, then Jane Foster happens to be the one who carries the ether to Asgard. There is no other human on Earth who would accidentally get the ether caught in them, but who's also happens to be the girlfriend of the son of the king of Asgard, who takes her back to the one place where it shouldn't be. And the dark elves are now going to go after her. Where? In Asgard. It's coincidence, 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 coincidence. Now, why does it happen to Jane? I'll tell you exactly why it happens to Jane. Because she's the top-billed female actress in the movie who happens to be the girlfriend of Thor. If it was any other actress, any other character who happened to be dating Thor, that'd be the one who would end up with the ether. But to me, it's coincidental writing. One coincidence, two coincidence, you can kind of get along with. But this is a heap of coincidence that unless I'm missing something, there's no purpose. There was no good reason for her to have gotten caught and pulled into that place to get the dark energy fused into her. Unless that was like the ether's plan. Are we talking about now the ether is like the one ring who is trying to find the one person who can carry him to the right place? Am I missing something?
I'm willing to say that there's no good reason for her to be in London at her mom's house since she does not have an accent.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to say that.
So she has no reason to be there other than that she apparently has a mother who's British.
But if she's in London,
mm-hmm.
She's got devices. She's got devices and technology. It's not like she walked into this hole.
Okay.
She found the hole.
Let me stop you there. You are partially correct, except for one thing. Coincidentally, she just happens to be visiting her mother where that hole happens to be.
But they never say there's only one hole.
But it's the hole. Okay. This is the hole that not only is she...
I'm going to put you in the hole, Benny.
She gets pulled in. I have problems with this because this is where on a script level, you stop and say to yourself, okay, coincidence, coincidence, coincidence. We need to fix this and turn it into character choice, character choice, character choice.
If she had found the hole and it was in New Mexico, would you have been happy or would you just be upset? Because why is this one hole showing up in New Mexico?
You know, don't get me wrong. There's plenty of coincidence in the first Thor movie, okay? Here's what you do. You put her in Norway, and the devices are saying, go to London. And you're following the energy signature of this rift.
Yeah, because it makes perfect sense for her to be in Norway.
They sent her to Norway. This is why I say Norway. Okay, she could be in New Mexico. I don't care where you put her, but the bottom line is she should be following these energy signatures to that place instead of, oh, look, we finally got something. Again, I might be missing something, and on a second viewing, I might change my mind here, but it seemed to me like they hadn't – I mean they have the devices, but all of a sudden it's, oh, there's something nearby. There just happens to be something in London. No, have her following it. Have her in Norway where we found out in Avengers that they had sent her. She's researching in Norway. There's energy things, you know, in London. Okay, let's go there. Let's go to London. And it just happens to be she's following it instead of it just happens to be she happens to be at that spot. Okay? Now, that's character choice instead of coincidence. And that's what I'm talking about. When I'm striking against coincidence, I'm not saying you can't have coincidence. I'm saying find ways to make it more character-driven. And I feel bad even talking about it like this. Okay, because I liked this movie, but this set me against it. And this makes me say, okay, this is lazy script writing. She stumbles into the hole where the ether is? What in the world? I thought they put this in a place where it's safe. But apparently rifts in the universe are just going to open up straight there. Thor's girlfriend to the ultimate evil stuff. It's a coincidence. Set me against the movie.
Have you ever sat down and thought about the coincidences in our life that's led us to have a relationship, Ben?
But Daniel, it's character-driven coincidences that did that. It's
really?
It is. It's really? Not just, oh, all of a sudden, oops. Oh, hi, Daniel. Let's do a podcast. No, no. I mean, things happened. We met each other through things we had chosen to do that were
there's no good reason that you and I should know each other. No good reason.
Well, I would disagree, and I'll say this. In a movie, acts of God, acts of coincidence that would fit fine in the real world are held to a higher standard of storytelling, okay? Truth is stranger than fiction. Why is that? When you do something strange in fiction, you can do anything you want. You can have gods falling to the earth who wield giant hammers, okay? But the truth is you've got to temper it, because if you go too crazy, people will turn against it. And this is coincidences, coincidence, coincidence. It turned me against things. I was already kind of against it, and then all these coincidences happen. Now, once the coincidences stop and we're getting into things, we're getting to character stuff then. She's got the stuff. Thor comes and finds her. Thor whisks her away. It's happening pretty quickly, but at least it's character stuff.
All right. I'm never going to win with you on this.
Not on coincidences. You're not going to change my mind unless you can prove to me. So,
I'm just going to surrender because I don't want to talk about it anymore because I have my own questions.
Okay.
So here's my plot question. It goes back to Thor the Dark World. So if Malekith gets what he wants and he uses the ether to put everything into darkness, is that really that bad? Because, I mean, Malekith plans on living there. I mean, sure, you won't get a suntan.
They talk about the destruction of the universe.
But yet, it's pretty clear he thinks he's going home.
It was unclear to me. And again, I need to see this again, I think. His motivation was unclear to me.
I almost wondered if what was being set up was that Malekith was trying to turn our universe into a dark matter universe. And that he intended for him and the dark elves to live there at home. I mean, they talked about, you know, back in the darkness.
Yeah, to revert back, maybe.
So would that have really killed everyone?
And
is Malekith really a horrible, horrible guy? If really what he's trying to do is return his people to their natural state?
That's a good question, Daniel. And one that I don't feel the movie really addresses. I think it is. He is a bad guy if you're saying he's willing to do that. First of all, he killed off everyone anyway. They're going to have to start repopulating the universe.
Well, no, he has the ship of infinite elves.
Yeah.
Because he seems to never run out of guys.
But obviously, if you're willing to destroy everyone to, you know, take and put things back to where they were, then I'm going to have a problem with you.
Okay. Is he evil or is he focused and determined?
I think that the evil comes from the selfish part of it, the selfish ambition part of it.
But is he being selfish for himself or is he supporting his people?
That's the question.
I mean, is he in effect a mutant agitator if we were in the X-Men universe? I mean, is he not standing up for his people? Is he not a revolutionary who just wants to completely reform the universe, which may or may not kill everyone?
Yeah, and we're kind of getting into some character stuff here, but I'll say this. He's definitely a villain who believes himself to be the hero of his story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when you look at the plot, that's a big question for me is really how evil is this Malekith guy that wants to revert the world, the universe? And if he does, is it really that horrible?
Well, he has the word Mal in his name. So there's that, but
there is that. And here's the other piece. We're talking about plot, right? Because you talked about coincidence for so long that I may have zoned out there for a while.
We're still talking about plot. Yes.
We're still talking about plot. Do you have anything else to add about plot? Because I do want to add one more thing about plot.
What's that?
Mid and post-credit scenes are fantastic. Thank you, Kevin, for putting us back on course. Because Iron Man 3s were completely worthless except for a laugh.
Fantastic.
They were.
That's the word you're going with?
Yes, because here's what we got. A, we've already talked about the post-credit scene, which puts Thor in position to be ready for Age of Ultron. But when you look at the mid-credit scene with Guardians of the Galaxy, we have also reestablished the Thanos storyline thread.
I agree with you that we have established and kind of given us some more course direction.
We are heading to Infinity Gauntlet. We are.
How dry was that mid-credit scene, though? There was no energy to it. It was just...
Dude, they brought him in for like half an hour on a Tuesday.
I just felt like I was watching... I don't even know what. It just felt very dry.
Don't watch. Just listen.
Very...
Just listen. And we're back on course.
Unenergetic. And then he actually says, one down, four to go. Like, what? Who scripted this? I can totally understand why the director of the movie was like, he distancing himself from that mid-credit scene. Because we want to talk about style. We lose all style in that scene.
Yeah, it's not delivered. It's not delivered the best. I mean, we've seen them do better work.
Yeah, now it's good information. And it is nice to see, okay, yes.
And it's huge information because it really does. In Thor, we saw the Infinity Gauntlet. We now know that 100% we've seen, quote unquote, one Infinity Stone in the Tesseract. Now, we had talked before about that the stone in Loki's staff during the Avengers, which was an extension of the Tesseract, was an Infinity Gem. But it sounds like from this that the Tesseract itself is, in fact, a gem.
I think so. I think that the Tesseract itself is the gem or is the item, and that his staff was powered by it or had a sliver of it or something like that.
And I think we can assume the Tesseract is the mind gem because it's bluish and it has the ability to control people. So the Tesseract is the mind gem. Now we also find out that the ether is also a gem.
Yeah, so this smoky energy red stuff.
Yeah. So if we were to say just go with red, that would mean that it's the power gem. So accesses all power and energy that ever has or will exist and can boost the other gem's effects. So do you feel like the ether fits that?
I don't know. And they don't have to go along directly with what things are in the regular Marvel Comics universe anyway. But
And I think they're not because before we even started recording tonight, you said, well, those are gems?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it might be safer to say that the gems are relics and that maybe what we'll see in the gauntlet when we get to Avengers 3 is, in fact, things like the mind gem, which are pieces of the bigger relic, but not the whole relic itself.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that all pans out. But
hey, we got four more gems to go.
As we were reminded.
Yeah, because...
Very specifically in dialogue.
Well, the collector's got five more to go. We have four more to go to find out what they are.
No, he has four more to go. We have three more to find out. Aren't there five? There's six?
No, he said he has five more to go. He doesn't control the Tesseract. He's talking about what he has in his hand.
Are there six gems?
There are six gems.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So he said five more to go. One of them, he knows what it is and where it's located, which is the Tesseract.
Yeah.
The other four are mysteries to us, the fans of the MCU.
Yeah.
But we are very, very clearly going towards Infinity Gauntlet because, as we may find out in Guardians of the Galaxy, he's attempting to assemble it.
So here's what I'm wondering, though. Is the Collector, this is a safe place to put this?
I about did a spit take there. Yes, very good question because, hello, he has slaves. He has clearly encaptured and is displaying sentient beings. And yet the Asgardians are trusting him with an infinity gem.
Yeah.
And they know it's an infinity gem. And they call it an infinity gem to his face.
I just don't get that. They handed over him willingly. Why can we trust him? So
yeah, maybe it has something to do with his character, that even though they know he's bad, because they're clearly uncomfortable. I mean, Sif is not comfortable there. Even though he's bad, he can at least be trusted to not give it out because he's the collector.
Right.
You know, if it's in his collection, he's going to protect it.
Which is my question, and we'll find out more about him in Guardians of the Galaxy. But is the reasoning here is he's not a good person, but he's not going to lose it. No one is going to be able to take that from him because he has some sort of great vault or something like that. I'm wondering if that's what it is.
But again, applause. Thank you, Kevin, for listening to the show. Thank you for hearing my complaints and my feedback, specifically my feedback because I was never out of love with the MCU. But thank you for putting us back on track with telling our bigger story.
Yeah, with a super dry and energyless I'm not going to say it anymore. I feel like I'm ragging on the movie, and I'm not. I like this movie, but I have problems with it. Big problems with it. More plot stuff. We go into the dark world, and again, this is expectations. I was expecting this to be some sort of epic quest kind of thing where Loki and Thor have to work together and go on this epic quest where they're going to go and have to fight through enemies and stuff like that to get to wherever it is that they're going, either to get rid of the dark energy or to find it or whatever. Their epic quest involves, we're going to fly through a tunnel, we're going to land, and we're going to walk across a desert a little bit. And then it's just done, you know. And Loki, man, he gets taken out of the movie early on.
Early.
Comparatively speaking, okay.
Yes, he wasn't there on Earth at the big climax.
I mean, he's there for Act 1 and Act 2. And actually,
but he's also not the villain. He is a supporting character in this movie.
Right. His death is actually, in a lot of ways, the Act 2 curtain, and kind of pushing us into Act 3, where we kind of hit that point of no return where you have to go after this guy. And now Thor is not just out for vengeance against his mother, but against his stepbrother or adopted brother, rather, who is like blood to him. I mean, and who he could never trust, but who finally, for once, it felt like to Thor he was doing something right. And
though he didn't confess of his role in the death of their mother.
No, but did you expect him to?
No.
No.
Because he's Loki. He's the god of lies.
Plus, there wasn't a lot of time. But, again, I thought the movie was winning more about this, you know, quest. And instead it was, we're going to go from point A, we're at point B, and then, oh, hurry, let's fight these guys. And, you know, so I fully admit maybe it's expectation for me that I was expecting one thing, got another, which is what happened to a lot of people for Iron Man 3. You know, they expected one thing, they got another. So I'm wondering if I'm going to change my tune after seeing it again.
Well, hopefully, because it's a wonderful movie.
Yeah. See, I'm going to buy it and I'll watch it again. I'm going to take my son to see it.
But that's not saying a whole lot, Ben. For heaven's sakes, you own David Hasselhoff's Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, but I bought that for a purpose, you know. Don't knock me.
It's a wonderful, wonderful movie.
We're going to talk about that movie later. We will.
Jingle bells, jingle.
Maybe that'll be our Christmas gift to our listeners. Mm, yeah,
it is a gift.
Okay, so as far as the plot goes, then we go from there, we go to Earth, and we have the whole fight in London where they're jumping through portals and ending up in other worlds. And I'm trying to figure out, how is this working? You know, what are the rules here? And I can't figure it out. This is where I'm realizing I'm thinking too much.
The rules are you fall through a hole, and then coincidentally,
yep,
there's another hole nearby.
You fall through a hole and it takes you to the exact place you need to be for the plot, which is the definition of why I hate coincidence. And then go really through another hole, which takes you to the next place that you need to be for the plot or for the gag.
And I think the other part of the holes is it's really cool when you see three or four of them on the same screen and there's different worlds on the other side.
I'll admit, this was a really cool sequence, okay? I will fully admit, this is a cool sequence where you have them, you know, bouncing from one place to another. There's funny gags, you know, Thor ends up on the tube. You have the whole thing with the intern and the intern's intern where they appear through a wormhole that they're kissing. That was meant to be really funny. And there's fun things going on, but I don't get the rules of things. I'm following this movie and I'm asking myself, am I thinking too much about this? Should I just go along for the ride?
Yes, please do, sir.
And so this is where I realize this is not a movie that I should be saying, oh, this coincidence here happens to Jane Foster. This coincidence here happens here. You have Eric and his coincidences, and, you know. I mean, how close to London is Stonehenge?
For someone who's been to London, I don't know, but I never actually considered, even though I was in London for 5 weeks when I was there, going to Stonehenge was not something that I ever viewed as being cheap enough for me to go.
Let's find out. How close to London is Stonehenge?
I mean, the thing is, I mean, it's the UK, so everything's going to be relatively close, and you can get there in a few hours at the least.
85 miles from London.
Yeah.
85 miles from London. Okay, so is there not law enforcement closer than London? Or did they drive out to somewhere else to get Eric? And why is there an old American guy?
Is he American? B, I didn't assume those were London police.
No, they're not London police. They're not London police at Stonehenge.
Yeah.
But the question is, did he end up in London? And was there no place closer? And that I don't know. I mean, it just, again, it's another thing that it's just for the plot. You just go along with it. And when I'm talking about the American, there's our Stan Lee cameo. In what is that place anyway? It's prison, isn't it?
Is it a sanatorium?
Maybe.
Yeah, I looked at it as a mental.
Seemed to be run by police, though.
Yeah, it's a hospital.
Yeah. But anyway, Stan Lee's in there.
And come on. Did you like it?
Yeah, it was funny. It was funny. And it was a perfect scene for him to be in because of the chalkboard there with certain things written on there about, I think. Again, I didn't notice any of this. Afterwards, I saw someone post something on Facebook where it's like it says 616 or something like that. And then there's a couple other references to other Marvel things on the chalkboard there. But I didn't notice it. But if I had, I would have said that's the perfect place to put Stan Lee. So
I'm trying to look at a picture of it right now.
Yeah, it's
I don't get it. Oh, there's 616 Universe.
Yep. There's a couple other things that it mentions. Something to do with Doctor Strange and the storyline where Doctor Strange sent the Hulk to other dimensions and stuff like that. But yeah, so that's another thing where I'm just kind of, well, wait a minute. And you know, Eric's whole what?
The Fault. I'm reading The War of Kings right now.
Oh,
Guardians
okay.
of the Galaxy. Awesome.
The Fault, yeah. So, okay. So, I mean, story-wise, this is a story that it's meant to be a simple story, and I really feel like I should have been watching it from that perspective, where it literally is kind of the Lord of the Rings thing, you know? There is a item of power. The item of power happens to be in a person of great importance to our main protagonist. So he wants to protect her. the bad guy wants the item of power, so the bad guy's going after her.
Do you love the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings?
I do. And
you don't find too much coincidence in the fact that a hobbit fell down a hole in which the One Ring was actually existing?
Look, this movie is Lord of the Rings. I will fully say that right now.
Well, I watched The Hobbit this weekend, too, and I found Thor a little bit more interesting than the way too drawn-out Hobbit.
I've got problems with that movie, too, but we're not talking about that one. So the end of the movie, again, you know, it's the end of the movie. You know, they defeat the bad guy. They destroy him using his own technologies, the spaceship that he had, and all these different wormholes going on. And he gets a nice, good villain ending. His spaceship falls on him. And there we go.
And then through a hole.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we got the plot covered.
Mostly. And this is where I turn against the movie is in plot. This is where the gray dips is with the plot and the coincidences and me overthinking things and being too analytical and too grumpy, I guess. I don't know.
Ben Avery, yeah. Grumpy cat.
Okay.
All right.
Characters.
Let's rapid fire through these.
Okay. We got Thor.
He's grown.
He has.
He is more sensible. He is more rational. He cares about others more than himself. He's still fun. He still is awesome in battle,
and
even jokes about it. But yeah. But he, I feel like it, and we'll probably talk about this in a few minutes. I feel like Thor and Odin have changed places.
Mm.
Where Thor is now the wise counselor.
Yeah, there is something to that. And you know, this is not an unearned change. Thor and the Avengers leads up to this character that we have in this movie.
Well, and I will say, I kind of wish I read the Thor, the Dark World prelude, which I haven't read yet, but will. Because I feel like maybe in there we might have seen him in these other realms.
Yeah.
Becoming this stronger person.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
No, you get him. Let's see. They do Avengers. And then they kind of fix the bridge. So.
Yes. But yeah, I think Thor's grown.
Yeah.
And that's probably the biggest impression that I get out of him in this movie, is we have a Thor of greater character.
And his arc, it's a decent arc. His arc is, I'm supposed to be king one day, but then the movie ends with him saying, you know what, Father, you are meant to be king right now. I am not. I am not meant to rule. I'm meant to protect.
Well, and I think one of my issues with this is Odin is saying it's time now for you to be king.
Right, and there's it doesn't seem like there's any reason for it to be now.
Yeah, other than the fact that he's well esteemed amongst the Nine Realms because they quote unquote all saw him.
And who better to lead than someone who doesn't necessarily want to be in control?
Yeah.
And I think that this is setting up.
I was waiting for you to say a reality TV star. but I mean, it's not time for him to be king. Now, do I think he's ever going to be king? Absolutely. And so I look at something like Thor, the God of Thunder, which is the current 616 version, where one of the initial God Butcher storyline in Marvel Now does show you, the Thor now, which would be in line with our MCU Thor, is the adventurer hero, but the Thor of the future is the King of Asgard.
Yeah, I definitely think we're looking at the building and the development and the growth of someone from prince to king. And, you know, starting in that first movie, going into Avengers and going into this movie. you know, we see him going against his father's orders. His father's orders are not wise. And this is, you know, him going and making choices, making the hard choices that a king would have to make to say, well, we're going to do this because this is what's best for our people.
Though he does completely steal the plot of Thor in going around his father's wishes and using Heimdall to help him and his friends, just like in Thor, because, you know, Ben hates movies that repeat themselves.
Didn't say that to either. I didn't say I hate movies that repeat themselves. I'm saying I wish they wouldn't have been so repetitive. It turns me against them. I don't hate it. It just gives me a grumpy mood. I don't know. But yes, Thor. Also, again, I mean, this guy, Chris Hemsworth. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
He's still one of the best choices they could have ever made. I'm sure that there are other people who might fit the role well, but he's taken it and turned it into his own.
Absolutely. So. All right. Again, this is rapid fire. Jane Foster.
Jane Foster. I don't know what to say about her. I was so glad that it wasn't. You came to New York and didn't call. I was afraid that that's where they were going with that. When I saw some things in the trailers with her, it was, you mean the bridge has been fixed and you haven't come? And then he explains why, and she's like, that's a good reason. I was like, okay, that was a better delivery, better punchline, and better character stuff for Jane Foster. I don't get a feel for her character.
I think she's static. She's the same Jane from the first movie.
I mean, what changes about her in this movie is she becomes a carrier of the ether.
Yeah.
And she spends more time with him.
I think if anything, and I think maybe it has to do with Natalie Portman. I think in our last episode that we recorded, there's some folks that are not exactly fans of Portman.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder if it's the writing or if it is the acting, but she's not moving along.
No.
The thing that I learned most about Jane Foster in this episode isn't anything that she did, but the fact that the Asgardians make numerous references to the fact that compared to Thor, she is just a blink in time.
And that is an interesting thing, an interesting theme. I mean, he's in love with her because of their weekend in New Mexico, as you put it. This is all true. I mean, this is Highlander stuff. Where the Highlander who's immortal, how many wives has he had in the past where they're going to die? And this is the same thing with Thor and this human. So
my question is Natalie Portman back?
I don't know. I think so. I mean, that end credits, post-credits thing would really seem to suggest that she's not going anywhere for a Thor movie anyway. But...
because in many ways it's a convenient thing to say, oh, she was human, she died, she was fragile.
I fully expected them to do that in this movie.
Absolutely.
Fully expected her to die.
And in Thor 3, I would say she's, you know, let's put up the Thor 3 death pool, shall we? I know you love death pools.
But I expect her to die in this movie so that honestly, Sif and Thor would have a clear path for a relationship.
Well, and let's just transition into that a little bit. I mean, I do feel like Sif is – they're intentionally setting us up for this love triangle, and it has to go somewhere because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and they definitely – I thought they were going to go into it, but you're right. Setting up is what they're doing. It's unfortunate that a lot of Sif's character development in this movie was to give Natalie Portman bad looks.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of setup for the future, and I think fans want to see more Jamie Alexander in these movies. I know that she made a big fashion splash at the premiere and that she got a lot of attention, where I didn't see Natalie Portman's dress being talked about in any news stories.
Well, and in the actual movie itself, as far as the Asgardian cast goes, she's a highlight.
Yeah.
I mean, you like her.
Of the friends, she gets the most to do, and She really is. I mean, she's the one you want to see more of. And let's be honest, she's a hero who's carried her own books at times.
Mm-hmm.
Where some of these others, like Volstagg and Frandell, can't say the same thing.
Well, they get their Warriors 3 books, though.
Yeah, but it's not like they're getting multi, you know, more than miniseries.
Right. So, okay, so the Warriors 3, they're the same. There's no character development. There's no character change. They all get their own moment, though.
Even though we have Flynn Rider now as Fandral instead of Prince Charming. Again, another Tangled connection.
But the bottom line is they all get their moments. They get their moment to hold the gate, so to speak. They're their heroic moments.
Yeah, but it's their moment in character. No growth. It's what you expect from them.
Yeah. Odin.
Loki.
What about him?
Well,
he gets some emotional depth given in his part where he's. I love the scene where he puts on the facade that he just doesn't care, and then Thor is just like, "Just no more illusions." And you see that Loki has just let himself go.
That is the exact scene that I was thinking of.
Great scene.
That is a fantastic moment. Because you see him up until that point, and a lot of it's not necessary. Well, do you think it was just when she passed away that he put on the fake, the lie? Or do you think he had been lying throughout the movie?
Yes, I do. I think it was when she – because I think the start of it was when he stood in the middle of the room and just – and all the things go flying. And then I think the tantrum went on from there.
Yeah.
And you're seeing the after effects of the tantrum. Again, that was a great moment. We love Tom Hiddleston. I think he should have been the next Doctor. If the story had worked, if they had chosen to put him in that role, he would have made a fantastic Doctor. He makes a fantastic Loki. I don't
question whether or not he's coming back.
Well, there is no question.
Just story wise.
I think that the setup is nice to leave him out of Avengers Age of Ultron. He is in Asgard. Now, the question is, this is a question that comes from that.
If there's a Thor 3, there has to be him.
Yeah.
If there's a Thor 3.
Thor 3 will have Loki. The question is, where was Odin during that scene where Loki was pretending to be Odin?
Oh, that's easy. Odin sleep underneath the throne.
Eh.
You may not know this, but Odin's got a little bed underneath there, just like George Costanza at Yankee Stadium. And Loki knows about it. And so when he overcame him, Odin just entered Odin's sleep and Loki just tucked him in.
Okay. Well, so, you know, I don't think that we're going to find out that Loki's been ruling as Odin in Iron Man or in Thor 3, but he's definitely up to something. And the next movie will be, I think, Thor versus Loki.
Yeah, and Loki shows that regardless of the fact that at times we think he's working with his brother, he's still about his own self-interest. He still cares about himself. He's still the master of lies. And even though he has a very impressive death scene, I was convinced.
I was not. I knew that it was not the end of him.
I was sitting there thinking to myself, look at this. One movie, Thor loses 50% of his family. I was convinced.
Thor still lost it as far as Thor is concerned, he has.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, in reality, Loki's still coming around. Maybe he has lost 50% if Odin is, in fact, not asleep, but dead as a doornail.
But yet again, it's another Thor movie where Loki dies, isn't dead.
Absolutely.
And you know that's that. Honestly, though, let's look at Loki. That's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
You know, we just happened to catch the two times in his life where that was the lie that he told. But if there were other opportunities for him to do that and pretend to be dead, he would have done it.
And what I've heard Tom Hiddleston say that he's pitched a Loki standalone movie in which Loki travels through the 20th century and just causes mischief in history.
Mm.
Because again, Loki's lied more than twice.
Yeah, I don't want to see a Loki standalone movie. I want to see Loki and Thor going against each other. And
Oh, you know what I want to see? I want to see Agent. I want to see good old AC outsmarting Loki because he's got it coming to him.
Yeah.
Stupid ass Guardian Spear. Destiny.
And then you have this is of course where we find Loki saying, "Well, wouldn't it be better if I was, you know, Sif?" Or wouldn't? And then you get Chris Evans making his return. Although it's not Captain America, technically speaking, but it's a great turn for Chris Evans to take.
It's a brilliant cameo. Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. It fits the story. It's funny. It got a crowd reaction in the theater that I was sitting
in. The music shifts into the Captain America march and everything. So Loki, he's definitely a highlight in the fact that he's a low light for this movie as far as he's bad. He is bad news, and he's a good antagonist character.
All right. So speaking of other characters that haven't grown, and don't worry, we're not going to go through everybody because we're not going to do the whole Warrior 3. Darcy, she's still Darcy.
She is still Darcy and slightly more lines. And I'm going to just say it. I was not happy with her necessarily.
But she's Darcy. She's not written for our target audience.
She's definitely not written for me.
So let's move on to Eric. Eric's gotten a little crazy.
Yeah, there's some character development there. I mean, it was played for laughs. It was played for jokes, yucks and kicks. And it was funny. It was funny.
But at the same point, it is poignant in this fact that having Loki in his brain has broken him.
Yeah, he's a broken man. And I still don't feel at the end like he's whole. So.
All right, we're going to do three more.
Okay.
Two of them are going to be rapid fire. One's going to take a while.
Okay. Hit me.
Odin. We've talked about him some. I feel like Odin is the foolish warrior king.
Yeah,
He's aggressive. He's martial. He's not making good choices.
He's King Lear, you know, where he's kind of at the end of his reign, and he's not showing the wisdom that he had in the middle of his reign. And it's interesting to play him that way. I don't feel like it's a bad characterization. I think it's taking the character into a good place as far as dramatically speaking. It's a good character moment for Odin.
And we also find out that he's anti-human.
Yeah.
He's a little bit of a speciesist.
Yeah, he's just...
Because we have established the Asgardians are aliens, but he's not pro-human.
No.
Because he wants his boy to marry Sif.
Well, and, you know, again, you think about it. How would you feel if your child was going to marry someone who would live for a day? Your child has known this person for a day, is going to marry them, and at the end of that day, that person is going to die.
Isn't there a Nicholas Sparks book based on that?
I'm sure that there is. But, I mean, you can understand his wanting to protect Thor from that. It's an interesting prospect that I had, you know, I hadn't really thought of necessarily. But, yeah, it's an interesting prospect to think about that she is a mere blink in time for someone who lives to be 5,000 years old.
And speaking of someone who didn't make it 5,000 years, Frigga.
Who, she can fight.
Yeah, so again, another character who got more to do here. Of course, for her, it was her final act.
Mm-hmm. They got to start finding some lower budget character actors to bring in.
Well, so. We also find out it does firmly establish that Loki was taught his tricks by mom. And that Loki was a mother's boy,
mm-hmm.
and Thor was a daddy's boy.
Yeah. And they both loved... I mean, I think that Loki's love for her was the one lie that he didn't tell. Or the one thing that wasn't a lie, I should say. I think he truly felt for her. Which is why he lied to show that he didn't feel for her, I think. Because... You didn't want to put that honesty out there.
Exactly.
So.
All right, let's talk about the last one, and then I've got a question.
Who is the last one?
Malekith, who we've talked a little bit about his motive.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel like we need to necessarily go into that. But here's my question. They brought in Christopher Eccleston,
right,
who I, of course, love since he was Claude in Heroes. But couldn't anybody in the world have played Malekith?
Possibly, but he brings the weight to it. I think
really?
That, yeah.
He does?
I think so.
Really? I mean, he brings the marketing. I could barely tell it was him.
Yeah, but he has... Yeah, I think he was a strong enough actor to peek through the makeup.
Really? Wait, how did
now,
he
there
act?
Wasn't a lot of range in the character.
How did he act?
There wasn't a lot of range.
His face is rigid.
Yeah.
Because of the makeup, and his voice has been voiced over. And obviously computer modified.
It's definitely modulated, yeah. But
yeah. I'm convinced that anyone could have played Malekith.
Possibly, but I liked him. He worked for me.
They could have computerized Malekith.
They could have. And then they had the cursed in there too.
This is not me criticizing Eccleston. This is me saying just the way he was used did not really deem who he is.
Yeah, you know, a lot of villains
he's
are like that.
He's Claude from Heroes. I mean, sure, some listeners may be yelling right now because they'd be like, he's a doctor, for heaven's sakes. No, he's Claude from Heroes. He's the Invisible Man.
He became Claude from Heroes. He left the doctor to do that. And then he didn't come back to that. So I was always disappointed when he disappeared and stayed disappeared in Heroes. But that's another thing for another day. Yeah. And so then you have the cursed. That was a cool character design. I like the way they used that mask and the horns. That was cool. And made for a good battle there with him and Thor. That was cool. But I think that a lot of the movie just feels to me like it's just cool stuff. Cool stuff happening. And we have to get from point A to point B, so we're just going to write the script to get from one cool thing to another one.
But isn't cool stuff enough?
It is sometimes. It is. And honestly, sometimes I feel like cool stuff is enough. So,
do you have anything else you want to say about this movie?
Yeah, I have one thing I want to say about this movie. Is they don't even address... I mean, it's just they just rebuilt the Rainbow Bridge, and it's just taken care of now. And I just felt like there was supposed to be import to this bridge being destroyed. And my whole thing during the Avengers was there's supposed to be, you know, weight to that, and it's not even really mentioned. But oh well, no biggie. So we do need to talk about... We talked about the Collector. Talk about where's Thor going from here? He's going to Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron.
And is there going to be a Thor 3?
Based on current box office, I'm guessing yes.
I hope so. I like this
Chris
character.
Chris Hemsworth has got a payday coming.
Yeah. I like this character. I like this world. This movie wasn't 100% up to my expectations, but I do want to see another one. Like I said, it's a good movie. It's a fun movie. It's an enjoyable movie. Just, I feel like everything comes down to it wasn't the movie I wanted it to be when I thought it wasn't the ticket I thought I was buying. Of course, I didn't read any reviews or anything ahead of time, so I didn't know what I was getting into.
Spoilers.
Okay. One last thing to talk about, and then we'll get into listener feedback, and that is the episode The Well. They talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is coming in to clean up after the events of Thor the Dark World. What are they cleaning up?
Okay, I've got the answer to this.
I hope it's the same answer I have for it.
They are coming to fix a stick that is, in fact, an LMD.
That's not my answer for the question. I'm hoping they're coming to get that dog thing. I want to see my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. try and rally and get that dog and capture it.
You know what?
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be awesome. That's a good dream. it's nice pie in the sky.
Yeah, it's out of the budget, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's not out of the budget. And we've seen a trailer, and in the trailer, we don't see the dog. What we see is something overtaking Ward. And in many ways, as I watched that, I said to myself, other than the fact that they're giving us some sort of Norse relic, I have no idea what this has to do with Thor: The Dark World.
I have not seen the trailer.
Yeah. You want to hear my theory, which I think is even more plausible than the dog or my LMD? Here's my real theory.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Ready.
You sitting down?
I'm sitting down.
Spear of Destiny.
Wow, that'd be great.
We see a stick. They were calling it a staff. But, I mean, when you think of relics, you think of comic book history, both Marvel and DC. I would go with a Spear of Destiny-like thing before the dog just because of the special effects budget.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see the trailer, so I don't know exactly what we're looking at there. But
there's a stick. They call it a staff.
Okay. Well, that's not too bad. Where'd it come from, though?
Norway.
But it's in London.
But they're in Norway.
Maybe it's maybe it came from the Dark Elves. Yeah.
I mean, they're looking at like a Viking book at one point.
Okay. Well,
it doesn't look Dark Elvish. It looks to me like just Norse.
Here's the thing. Do you think they have held out on us and we're going to see Erik Selvig in this episode?
No.
Or a character of similar standing?
Nope.
No. Nothing?
Nope.
You have no soul.
I do. I
no
do
hope.
Have a soul.
No
I
hope.
Am, maybe I'm too cynical.
Okay.
But I mean, let's be honest. With Samuel L. Jackson, if they had kept that secret, that would have been their biggest prize yet.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the biggest prizes of the entire season, and that was leaked well before.
But something smaller, but still kind of cool and exciting. It'd be interesting. I mean, I would love it if they could make it. Okay. All right. All right. I'm accepting it from you.
All right. Let's find out what other people have to say about this movie.
Okay.
Shield Field Report.
Okay. So we do have a little bit of feedback about Thor: The Dark World. And for the most part, most people disagree with me. I'm just going to put it out there. It's not just
well,
you, Daniel.
As I've often said, Ben, I'm a man of the people.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to get into it. I've already said I've had my say. I've talked about how I feel about my say. I feel bad. But right now we're going to get into some listeners. And first is Bruce Otter. And his message was specifically after I asked for people to send something in if they wanted to about Thor. He said, I loved it. It was fun. And the darker, sadder elements didn't play as grim and gritty, which is something I've liked about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It can have situations that have gravitas and consequences without leaving you feeling grim and hopeless. There is an inherent sense of fun, which is what I loved about comics and superheroes in the first place. And, yeah, I mean, maybe I just have lost my sense of fun. I don't know. I like to
You know, Ben, but we've often described you specifically in this episode as dark and not fun. So,
well, that was kind of me joking around, but so we also
so
got
yeah,
some.
Yeah, you clearly lost your sense of fun and you're dark now.
I am. I'm Ben, the Dark World.
Ooh, who are you, Batman?
Yeah. Okay, so we've got my throat feels like I'm Batman. I'm Batman, the Dark Knight. Dark Star Trek Into Darkness, Thor: The Dark World.
I like hanging out with Thor.
Yeah,
it's a poster.
Okay, so we also got some audio feedback. First, we got something from a listener, Matt Anderson.
Hello, Daniel and Ben. This is Matt Anderson from the Sci-Fi Christian Podcast, calling with my review of Thor 2: The Dark World. All right, so I didn't love Thor 1. So I went into this movie with low expectations, but I was pleasantly surprised. I really liked Thor 2. So I give it a very solid 3.5, almost a 4. Definitely liked it a lot. It may be that I was more invested in the characters this time since I had already spent some time with them in previous movies, but either way, Thor 2, I recommend it for everybody. All right, guys, keep up the great work in the podcast. Thanks a lot for all you do, and I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
All right, so there it is.
Well, so
another listener who disagrees with me.
Well, I just feel good. I feel good to know that Matt got a chance to see Thor: The Dark World, since originally he was planning on going with me.
And he bailed on you?
And didn't, because I went and saw it in 3D.
Oh, we didn't
talk
about
that.
So
one of his questions that he asked on Facebook is, what did I think of it in 3D? And I would say it wasn't horrible in 3D. It wasn't one of those movies where the 3D took away from anything. But I also didn't necessarily feel like it added anything. For me, the 3D showing was just the time where I could go see it. And that was really, you know, I didn't take or add, where I did feel like maybe in Iron Man 3, which I also did see in 3D once, that some of the battle scenes, the 3D was really cool. But here, didn't add, didn't take away. It was just there.
I was in the same situation where that was the only time that was working for me to go, was for a 3D showing. And, you know, I would agree with your take. So, yeah. Let's see. Oh, we've got one more piece of feedback that's been sitting in my email inbox for a little while now.
So, ears unheard, because this has been sealed to me.
Yes, because we didn't want to spoil things. And now we can finally play it. This comes from Stephen Jones.
Hi, Daniel and Ben. It's Stephen here from Ormskirk, England. Just wanted to phone in, talk about The Dark World. I know you've not seen it at the time I'm recording this, but I'm sure you'll be doing a show on it. It was just really fun. Really, really fun. I was laughing all the way through. Loads of good lines. Loki was absolutely brilliant all the way through. If they'd have killed him off, like they tried to make us think they did, it would have just been a really bad decision. But they didn't. It was good how he did that. Thor's mother, Frigga, turned into, well, she was a bit of a badass, but you could see that she was going to die. There was no way she could have survived facing against them two. And then at the end, the Collector and the Infinity Stones, great little teaser for presumably the Guardians of the Galaxy and the whole Marvel Universe as a whole, really. Just going back, I love the way Loki turned into Captain America for a bit of a cameo by Steve Rogers as well. That was great. So hope you enjoy it when you see it, and I'll keep listening to the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
So, Ben.
Yes, Daniel.
Under for the good of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because Steven specifically sent this to us from across the pond.
Yes, he did.
At my request, I would like to issue to him my no prize.
Nice. It's been a little while since we had a no prize.
It has been a little while. And if I could, I would honestly issue a no prize to each and every listener tonight that has proven yet again that you're wrong.
Not that they're wrong as a listener, but
no,
I
you're
am
wrong.
Yeah,
you're wrong.
I feel like it, man. I feel like I first of all want to see it again, and I want to sit back and just watch it and not be. I don't know. I can't do it. I can't separate some of these things. And normally I can watch a movie for what it's meant to be, but this time I just was on the wrong page, and. Yeah, I feel bad. I do. I feel like I've been negative. I feel like I've let people down by being so negative. But, I mean, that's how I'm feeling about these different things at this point in time. And maybe when I watch it with my son, I'll see it through his eyes, you know, my 12-year-old eyes instead of my 39-year-old eyes. Or maybe not. Who knows? But it's a fun movie. It's a clean movie. There is some nudity somewhat with Eric Svelvig, you know, with his insanity.
come on, what man doesn't choose to not wear pants? You can think better without them.
Yeah, you just don't go to Stonehenge with it like that. Yeah, I just, you know, all of a sudden they have these rods that are meant to detect a wormhole, but they're able to just rewire the remote control so it can create a wormhole. And I just, it was things like that. That was just kind of like, oh, I don't know. I feel like I'm in the minority. And if I am, I'm more than happy to be in the minority about this movie. I'm glad that people are able to see and have fun with it in ways that I wasn't able to. I'd much rather have people enjoy something that I didn't enjoy than to be, you know, to not enjoy it along with me, I guess. So, but I will be going to see it again, and I will be buying it. You know, they're getting their $50 from me for, you know, multiple viewings of tickets for theater and then the DVD, unless I can win the Blu-ray like I won the Man of Steel Blu-ray. But yeah,
well, I'll be honest, buying it's probably the only way financially I can stem this bloody wound called Thor tickets coming out of my side, because a family of four.
Yeah, and it'll be one 3D showing for me and then another matinee weekday showing for my son and I.
Oh, that would have been delightful.
Yeah,
but again, I still felt good about it.
Yeah. So, well, with all that said, any last words about Thor? Anything else you want to mention? We talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Talked about. It seems like we've forgotten something, but we've gone on long enough. We have. Listeners, if you agree or disagree, let us know. Again,
feel free to let Ben know that he's. Enjoy life and have fun.
Oh, come on. You know, I admit to this. I cop to it. It's a fair cop. But
next time some kid standing on your yard, instead of yelling at him to get off the grass, maybe you should go out there, take off your shoes.
And play in the leaves with them, right? Yeah. Yeah.
And hopefully it's not so creepy that the cops come. So.
Well, I think that said, we can probably shut down this episode of Welcome to Level 7. Daniel, you have any parting words of wisdom or otherwise for our listeners?
Yeah. Can I have my shoe back?
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55, the word level, and then the number 7. That's 1-775-553-8357. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. 7 is spelled out. Follow us on Twitter, where we are level7pod. 7 is spelled out. Or email us directly, feedback@welcometolevel7.com. 7 is spelled out. Visit our website, welcometolevel7.com, for news, reviews, and links to our RSS feeds. Our theme music is The Light Fantastic by J.S. Earls, jserls.bandcamp.com. And again, thanks for listening. Okay, I didn't think you were going to go with that one.
Well, probably. Okay. Are you still on?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my problem. I was really, really, really wanting to go with... it was something like, I better get my pants.
Yeah.
But I couldn't remember if that was exactly it. So I was going to be like, oh, I better get my pants. But it's a movie theater, so I couldn't write it down. But then I was like, maybe I'll be like, born to be a king. I ask one thing in return, a front seat to watch Earth burn. But that sounded like way too much like you and the fun hating. So I couldn't really do that.
The Stan Lee cameo, that works.
Yeah, so I like the shoe. Well, I mean, hitting does not solve everything. I mean, that would have been nice. Yeah. Hitting does not solve everything.
Well, I feel like I really just poo-pooed this movie, but...
You like it.
I do like it. It's just the plot was not... It just wasn't there for me.
See you in hell, monster.
All right. Oh, that's everything, I think.
Let's go to bed.
Long night. All right. Talk to you later, man.
Different beds, but let's go to bed.
That's probably a... Yeah. Good idea. Later, dude. Welcome to Level 7 is a proud member of Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx. Learn how to podcast, get productive in your professional and personal life, theorize over TV shows like Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, Under the Dome, and of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., laugh with our clean comedy, delve into sci-fi and philosophy, learn critical thinking from movie reviews, and more at noodle.mx.